everybody, and welcome back to Thank Godzilla. It's Friday. It is Friday.
It is Friday.
That means it's Godzilla. My name is William Bibbiani. I am a critic. I write for The Wrap. Everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I am a senior staff writer over at Slash Film.
And you lord it over me every time.
You write reviews, too.
I write reviews. senior staff writer.
You get published a lot.
Yeah, but I don't get the senior discount.
I suppose not.
Anyway, this is our podcast where we're reviewing every single Godzilla movie.
And it's been a long decade.
Oh, my God.
10 years have passed since our last episode.
That Godzilla hasn't been here in 10 years. Woo! We've been reviewing every single Godzilla movie, and we've gone through pretty much every era except for, I guess, two. And we're about to enter the legendary Monsterverse. Which is the second American attempt, second successful American attempt to make a Godzilla movie. They've tried many times. And they succeeded in making the Roland Emmerich one. God, they did it.
And they made one from Gareth Edwards too.
Then they did this. Kind of unceremonious. When last we left Godzilla, it was the 50-year anniversary of Godzilla, and they had just come out with Godzilla Final Wars. Hmm. And Toho wanted to take a bit of a breather. Honestly, I respect that.
They were that was it. For Toho.
Yeah.
Like, they were done.
Yeah. For a while. Maybe not forever,
It's the 50th anniversary film, and I kind of disappointed.
Yeah.
It's like, we're not gonna do Godzilla, and I think some of the Godzilla makers were saying, you know what, Pokemon's the thing now.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's where audiences' attention are, you know, things like that, you know, in anime, you know, smaller creatures, not giant ones, and... So they said, yeah, we're kind of done.
They took a break. But there was still movement to pursue Godzilla in the meantime. You may recall that the director of Godzilla vs. Ghidorah...
Yeah, Yoshimitsu Banno is his name.
Yeah. He never came back to the franchise, but he wanted to,
he was the one carrying the torch. He's a producer on this new one.
No, he's executive producer on this movie, but he was going to be more involved, and the original plan for Godzilla, the Godzilla that became Godzilla 2014, was a short IMAX presentation that I believe was called Godzilla 3D to the Max.
Something like that.
It was like the tentative title. I never made it. But it was basically going to be a rehash of Godzilla vs. Ghidorah, but it was going to be with big, fancy 3D CG effects. And honestly, it probably would have been pretty cool. Mm. You know, it would have been kind of fun. I'm not against it in theory. But like a lot of projects, most projects really, it got stuck in development hell. And the studio that was going to make it... decided not to, and they ended up taking it over to Legendary, which put up, I think, 75% of the budget. Warner Brothers put up the other 25, and took it out of the short 3D IMAX presentation and said, fuck it, let's just make a new Godzilla.
And so they did. Not only did they make a Godzilla, just like the Roland Emmerich film, they're not going to play small. This is going to be a huge budget production.
Yeah, what was the budget on this?
Over $100 million, I'm sure.
It was $160 million.
Yeah, that's huge. Not cheap. That's
more money than I'm gonna guess right now. Hmm. I'm gonna make you a wager. I'm gonna bet that is more money than anyone listening to this podcast has ever made in their lifetime. And if I'm wrong, you owe me $100 million.
They don't know. You know what? They owe us their listenership.
If I'm wrong about making $160 million, you owe us $100 million. I'm not.
How are we responsible for their earning $100 million? I assume they earned it. Maybe they heisted it.
Yeah, if they heisted it, fucking give us the money.
You owe me 1%.
We're going to get a random $100 million donation to our Patreon. You're going to get so much exclusive shit for that. We will do a podcast of anything.
Here's our years-long podcast of the Zapruder film.
Every movie that's shorter than 2 hours, in order. Boom.
Let's do it.
Woo!
They spending all this money. They're making a new Godzilla movie. They're making tie-in books and comics. Oh, yeah. Like they're building out an entire extended universe. The entire idea was, because this came in the wake of the Avengers.
Yeah.
This was going to be a cinematic universe. It wasn't just going to be Godzilla. There were plans.
Well, to be fair, let's be fair here. Godzilla was already a cinematic universe. In fact, we've talked about it extensively on this podcast that movies, Godzilla had spin-offs, Godzilla had characters who had started off in their own movies, got dovetailed into Godzilla. Godzilla was not the first cinematic universe. As near as I can tell, the first cinematic universe was the Universal Monsters.
Yeah.
I can't think of one earlier than that. I could be wrong.
As far as we've been able to determine, there's probably something...
I'm sure there is, but generally speaking...
Disparate films that connected through events that were off camera.
Yeah. Godzilla... It already had that foundation. They weren't forcing it on Godzilla the way that Universal was trying to make the Dark Universe. Well, I guess the Dark Universe existed. I just realized I just completely torpedoed my entire point. Basically, after the Avengers was proven successful, because people forget that that first Avengers movie was an experiment. People didn't know if that was going to work. Mm. Like, you're going to put how many heroes in one movie? Isn't that going to be kind of... Are you going to be able to have time to even make that work? Is that going to be a successful filmmaking idea? And it worked. It was a huge hit. It's still a fun movie. And everyone...
Based more on marketing than I think anything that was in the movie.
Well, the thing that the movie... I feel the same way about the Avengers that I do about the first X-Men. And not just because I'm disappointed in both of the directors. and disappointed is putting it very mildly. But I feel like both of those movies... You know, you look back at them now, and they seem very very modest in a lot of ways. But what they were really doing was they were proof of concept. Mm. Like, the first X-Men movie was made on a very low budget for that kind of action movie. Mm. And it was basically just, is this even going to work? Mm. Do people want to see a whole bunch of superheroes in one movie? Will we be able to structure a film in such a way that we can actually give them screen time? They actually didn't. But, like, will it actually function? And once that was successful, they threw more money at X-Men 2. And with Avengers, it was basically like, hey, we took a whole bunch of different superhero franchises and we put them all in one movie and we didn't fuck it up. Mm-hmm. And it mostly kind of worked. It's not particularly great, but it's a lot of fun. And it showed that it can be done. And so now everyone's like, okay, there's a template. There's a formula. We're going to follow it. Or in the case of Warner Brothers, we're going to try to skip over the first step where we get everyone to like the characters first.
Right.
And then just, that might have been a mistake.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the whole model at the time, thanks to... pretty much just the Avengers.
Yeah.
How this idea of a cinematic universe that we can introduce disparate films and then have a crossover special, like TV.
Yeah.
And I think audiences liked it when the superheroes were doing it.
Yeah.
And it didn't work with any other thing, because this Godzilla MonsterVerse tried to do it. Well, the Universal MonsterVerse tried to do it.
The Universal MonsterVerse crashed and burned real fast because the mummy sucked.
They made one, it didn't do so well.
It was
well.
Really
bad. They kind of retconned, so well, maybe Dracula Untold is part of it, but that was also a bad movie.
No. I feel like if Dracula Untold had been popular, it would have been part of it, but it wasn't, so they said...
No, okay, it was. There was a crossover. He showed up at the end of The Mummy, remember? He was in a post-credits thing.
No, there was a post-credits thing at the end of Dracula Untold.
No, at the end of The Mummy, Dracula showed up. I'm pretty sure.
I think you're making that up.
No, I think
I think your imagination has gone wild.
Maybe so.
But in any case, I think there were a few more success stories than we're giving credit. And I think the Dark Universe crashed and burned. A few others, were planned and didn't come together. But the Legendary MonsterVerse did manage to get a foothold. They never were as huge as I'm sure Warner Brothers would have liked. I don't think any of them's ever made over $1 billion.
No, they all wanted the money from from Avengers, which made $1 billion.
Of course, and that's... There's still a relatively small number of films that have ever cracked $1 billion. Mm-hmm. There's more than there used to be, but you can't assume that.
Yeah.
And you're like, if it doesn't make $1 billion, we're not making a profit. Maybe don't do that. But the Godzilla movies and the King Kong movies made just enough to justify keep going. And now they're doing better than ever. They've actually, like, they've built goodwill over time.
Like the Fast and Furious movies, it took them, like, maybe 5 years to, or five movies to crack the code.
James Bond took a while to get to Goldfinger. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was, like, the third film, but still, it took them a little time.
Unfortunately, we have to suffer through this part of it, this early part of it. Because yeah. Gareth Edwards' movie, I watched it when it first came out, and I thought it was okay. I was frustrated when I first saw this movie at how much they eschewed images of Godzilla. They were like, we saw like a fin swimming through the water. There was this glory shot about a third of the way through the movie where the camera pans up Godzilla's body. We see him for the first time. Mm-hmm. He's about to face off against a monster. And then they cut away from the monster fight.
Uh-huh.
And we see the aftermath of the fight on a TV screen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
that's like, no, you worked up to that and you just cut away from it.
That's the thing that this movie gets mocked for a lot. And by the way, I looked up The Mummy. On IMDb, and I looked in their quote-unquote crazy credits section. Nothing about Dracula.
I swear I saw Dracula.
I think you're thinking of the post-credit sequence of Dracula Untold where it was present day.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't that in The Mummy?
No, that was Dracula Untold.
Oh, never mind.
That was a sequel tease at the end of Dracula Untold. Okay. We're set. What were we talking about?
I'm talking about how disappointing Gareth Edwards' film
is. Well, yeah, no. We are. But I had a point.
No, it was a common criticism at the time that there wasn't enough Godzilla on camera.
There was a tweet that went around, went a little viral when Godzilla X Kong came out a couple weeks ago. I guess not that long ago, but they pointed out that in Godzilla X Kong, Godzilla's only on camera for like 15 minutes.
Okay.
And then they said, yeah, look at all the Universal, you know, the legendary MonsterVerse movies, and how, like, yeah, Godzilla's only on screen for 12 minutes, 10 minutes, 8 minutes. Mm. What is this crap? And then I looked up Godzilla's screen time in all the Toho movies. That's about right.
Yeah, it's about
right. That's not uncommon. The difference in these modern movies, well, and the especially...
difference is, we're talking about minutes?
Yeah.
Now, how long is this movie?
There's two key X factors here that make it different.
Toho movies are 70 minutes.
Yeah, well, closer to 90, but still. Man. But still, like when you know, 1/9 of your movie has Godzilla in it, okay, that's not so bad. When 1/15 of your movie has Godzilla in it, it starts feeling like you don't have a lot of Godzilla. But the other thing is, the placement of Godzilla in this movie is all backloaded.
Yeah.
So this is like a 2-hour movie.
Mm. And, like 2 hours and 4 minutes.
Yeah, and they hold back on Godzilla for most of it. It's not like Godzilla is peppered throughout the movie. Godzilla doesn't have a ton of screen time in Godzilla X Kong either. But he's there at the beginning. Mm. He's there multiple times in the middle. And he's there at the end.
Where he is, what he's doing throughout the movie.
You're never thinking, where's Poochie? Like, no, you're actually, he's around. It's like when they talk about how Hannibal Lecter has only like 16 minutes of screen time in Silence of the Lambs, and that's like one of the lowest, I think it might be the lowest amount of screen time for any Best Actor winner.
Okay.
But he's there throughout the whole movie. That's what editing does.
Yeah.
So he's a presence. He's still driving the story forward. Godzilla, Gareth Edwards is Godzilla. I feel like what they're trying to do is be kind of classy about it, and we're not going to, like, just shove Godzilla front and center. We're gonna give you... And I think there are moments in this movie where we're getting the, like, worm's eye view of Godzilla, and you get a great sense of the scale. And those moments, those shots, are really epic, and they were really great in the theater, I remember. Yeah. But at some point, show us Godzilla! And they never just fucking commit...
Yeah,
showing, there's more of him at the end, but it's still, you know, through fog or whatever like that. We just give us, build to something, at least end well. Mm. And it just really wants to keep Godzilla from us. And I think there's some clever things they do with that and some things that really stink out loud.
The pacing's all over the place, and it's not just the way they're withholding Godzilla. It's the way they withheld Godzilla was frustrating, because they show us a little bit and then they cut away.
Well, it's like a joke after a while. Yeah, how many times can Lucy pull the football away from Charlie Brown? It's Godzilla, but he's a football.
There was a scene later in the movie when Godzilla's finally attacking San Francisco and people like flee into like a bunker to protect themselves.
Yeah.
And Godzilla's coming toward them, and we see Godzilla and they literally close a door in front of the camera.
Yeah, and like, then they just cut to something else.
Yeah.
Like, no! What are you doing?
He's here now! We waited all this time. So that's a big frustration.
Yeah.
But another thing is, this American Godzilla, actually resembles the Roland Emmerich Godzilla in a lot of key structural ways.
Mm.
It's just not a comedy film. This is actually a really turgid drama. The fact that we're getting to know these characters who are stalking these mysterious monsters, gathering evidence before we see a lot of the monster.
I don't think there was any humor to speak of in this movie.
No, there's no levity at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not that it necessarily needs it, but it is odd that there's none.
Yeah.
You know, like people talk about, like, oh, Christopher Nolan movies, you know, he doesn't have a sense of humor. He's got more jokes than this movie does.
Yeah. So we spend all of this time at the beginning of the movie establishing these human characters and how they're stalking Godzilla, and all these different players from all over the world are all coming together, and there's these weird military conspiracies. All of that is from the Roland Emmerich film.
More or less, yeah.
It's played a little bit differently, and like I said, it's played very lightly.
Yeah.
I can't say which one I prefer. I think they're both kind of bad.
I would say I like this one better, but it's mostly because of the grandeur that I think, which is weird because Roland Emmerich's usually really good at that.
Yeah.
I think...
Well, the special effects are better, that's for sure.
The special effects are a lot better, but that's for sure. But I feel like Roland Emmerich's sense of scale was actually kind of off a lot. And I think that the absolute silliness of the human interactions in Roland Emmerich's Godzilla made it impossible to, like, fully appreciate any of the giant shit that's happening.
Yeah.
And I feel like also he was, like, more afraid to kill people in that Godzilla than he was in Independence Day. There really isn't, like, a lot of tragedy. And I feel like in this movie, there are stakes. It is taking it seriously, and I think that adds up to something.
Well, they hurt a few famous actors and killed their characters.
Right, pretty quick, too. Let's just dive into it. So the Roland Emmerich, the Gareth Edwards Godzilla opens. I actually really like the credit sequence in this because first off, it's just like before. It's like a lot of like, you know, old footage of like nuclear testing.
It was the same credits designer as Final Wars.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Which was also like a lot of old stock footage of old Godzilla movies.
Sorry about the clip show. Have no fear. We'll be on for you. But what they do that's kind of fun is they'll put up like the talent's name, but it'll be in a block of text, and then they'll very quickly X out the text it's a classified document.
Redact it. Yeah.
And if you pause it, there are complete sentences.
There's cute gags.
And they're foreshadowing stuff you're going to see in the movie. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, what is a Muta? Well, we'll get to that, but like, yeah. That's cute. I
paused on one of the credits, and it said, are these monsters a hoax, or are they just people in suits? And I thought that was kind of a cute joke.
Right.
This Godzilla Final Wars, as we mentioned, is the last time we're going to see people in suits playing Godzilla.
Yeah.
They did motion capture for the CGI of the monsters, but yeah, there's no people in physical suits on physical sets. That's just a thing of the past now.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer, really. I feel like there's still a place for it.
There's still a place for it. The design of this Godzilla is way different. He has a much smaller head than in the previous ones. He's kind of a stubby nose, stands like bolt upright.
He's very barrel chested. Yeah, he's like a tough guy in a 50s movie.
Like a small head that just sort of he's almost teardrop shaped. Like tapers down to these gigantic feet. One of the bigger Godzillas. I think this is the tallest one that we've seen so far.
I think
Still has the nuclear breath, doesn't use it, uses it.
But he's not a nuclear monster in this one. They're very specific about that. They retcon that.
Yeah, that's been retconned. In fact, this is something I was going to mention, because this has always interested me about Godzilla, the way they keep on changing his origin, changes the meaning of what the monster is.
It does.
And in this one, I could tell you for sure this was Yoshimitsu Bono's idea.
Really, you think so?
That Godzilla is this kind of force of nature that arises when nature is kind of off balance. Because that's Godzilla versus the smog monster.
I guess it's fair probably to a point. But
The idea was all of those nuclear tests that created Godzilla back in 1954 in the original movie, that event was retconned. It turns out Godzilla was already around.
Godzilla's millions of years old.
Yeah, and those nuclear tests were actually an attack on Godzilla by the American government. We saw the monster and staged it as a nuclear test when really they were using nuclear bombs on this giant monster.
Yeah, which is an interesting take. It removes Godzilla's metaphor as a representative of shit America shouldn't have done, which is a little self-serving.
I think it was pretty gross that the American film should do that retcon.
Yeah. But it does open up It basically opens up their ability to sort of incorporate these monsters in a more general way, because I was thinking about how Stan Lee and all the Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko and all those people who were inventing superheroes at Marvel in the 50s and early 60s, the majority of the early Marvel superheroes, like Iron Man is a rare exception, the Silver Age superheroes were basically, I was normal, then radioactive stuff touched me.
Yeah, it was all radiation.
Yeah, Daredevil radiation, Fantastic Four cosmic rays, Spider-Man radiation, the Hulk radiation, it goes on and on.
Well, these days it's all giant bugs, giant spiders, giant grasshoppers.
And listen, that's fine if you're only doing it once, but if you're doing it over and over again, it starts to feel really unlikely.
Uh-huh.
Like, how many times is this going to happen? I feel like we wouldn't have radioactive stuff if this happened, or we'd be doing it on purpose more. Turns out radiation is great. So I feel like when Stanley said, I created the X-Men, Stanley said, because I was tired of coming up with origin stories. So fuck it, they're born with it.
They just have the powers
it's
now.
It's either they're born with it or it's Maybelline, one or the other. And someone laughed at that. Not Whitney, but someone laughed at that.
I got it.
Thank you. And I feel like the Legendary Monsterverse is trying to do the same thing. Instead of having, oh, Godzilla was created by a nuclear bomb. No, all the monsters are ancient. They're all just ancient beasts who have been reawakened or resurrected or pulled out of the earth. At the beginning of the movie, our two lead scientists, Dr. Sarazawa, played by Ken Watanabe.
Although it's not, it's a different Dr. Sarazawa.
Yeah,
in fact, his name is Ishiro Sarazawa.
Oh, that's cute. After
Ishiro Honda.
And
Sally Hawkins.
And Sally Hawkins as playing Dr. Vivian Graham. And
she should have just been called Dr. Sally Hawkins.
Sally Hawkins.
I love Sally Hawkins.
Sally Hawkins is a brilliant actor, like a genuinely brilliant performer. Mm. And we should all be in awe of her constantly. And it's not uncommon for a big studio film to get an excellent actor to do something just kind of mid.
Mm.
You know, you're just here to bring some respectability and get your paycheck. Rebecca Hall will be in these Legendary Monster movies. I was
about to mention Rebecca Hall.
I think she is maybe the greatest actor of her generation. Mm. I'm such a huge fan of Rebecca Hall. She's not doing anything interesting in those movies, but I'm not going to be mad about her paycheck. You get that paycheck, Rebecca Hall.
And she's committed.
Yeah,
you know?
She's
not sleepwalking through it.
She's doing the part, but here's the difference. She has something.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sally Hawkins doesn't have anything to do.
Yeah. It's the biggest ratio of brilliant actor to having nothing to do I think I've ever seen in a movie.
So yeah, Ken Watanabe is there because it's like we needed a seal of approval from a Japanese actor to sort of bridge the gap. We're not going to have all American actors in this. We're going to have at least one notable Japanese actor.
And Ken Watanabe is a great actor. Oscar nominated. He's awesome.
Of the actors from the original Godzilla movie, I forgot who it was, was going to play like a customs official in one scene.
That's a bummer. So at the beginning, they're
investigating a mine collapse.
Yeah, a mine has collapsed, and inside the mine, they have found a giant rib cage, like this huge cavernous rib cage. And we don't know this is what they're talking about yet, but they're concerned, is this Godzilla? Did Godzilla die? It's like, no, this has been here for way too long.
They ask, is this him?
Yes. And no, it's not. This one's been dead for a long time. They never get into this. I get the impression that's supposed to be another Godzilla.
Okay, I looked this up.
Is that canon here?
Because I didn't understand the story. I didn't know what that monster was. I didn't know what was going on in these scenes. And they don't really explain it too clearly in this movie. There was tie-in ancillary material that explained all the backstory. There's all these prequels and stuff.
Legendary loves its comic book tie-ins.
Yeah. That creature was Dagon.
What?
Lovecraftian fish monster.
Okay.
Also the same species as Godzilla.
Oh.
Died like in 11,000 BC fighting a monster called Muto Prime.
Well, it wouldn't have been called that at the time because Muto is an acronym.
Yeah.
So we gave him that later.
Yeah, but they call it Muto Prime and
Dagon
defeated Muto Prime.
Mm-hmm.
But was implanted with like eggs, like in the movie Alien.
Yeah.
And Muto Prime was dead, but then that Dagon died like 1,000 years later.
Yeah.
And those eggs just stayed incubated.
Just gestated this
for,
whole time.
For, yeah, thousands and thousands of years.
What they say, and this is, they will commit to this, that these monsters feed off of radiation. Mm. And back when the Earth was more irradiated in the earlier days where, you know, the Earth, the universe was new, they could just wander around the surface and be like, ooh, this radiation is great. Mm. And then when, you know, that changed and the entire, like, Earth's ecosystem shifted, they moved underground. And that will come into play later when we get to the Hollow Earth stuff in Godzilla versus Kong. So kudos, you did set the foundation. I'm not gonna. Then they did it so subtly that we weren't going, oh, this will be important later. It's like no, they did. Yeah. But the implication is that these Mutos, who will be the monster Godzilla fights later in the movie, they killed another Godzilla type monster, and they were a parasite and they lived inside of it. But without radiation, there wasn't much they could do. So they've just been lying dormant for forever. And when the mine collapsed, I guess a little bit of radiation came out. And then at some point they realized, hey, wait a minute. One of these eggs things hatched and crawled out the back of the island and left a giant trench. Uh-oh. And no one noticed.
And recently.
It's fresh. Yeah.
Like today.
It happened. Like, no one noticed that there was a helicopter flying like 2 minutes ago over the island. No one saw that.
Yeah, they take the other egg and they bring it back to the facility. I hate all the conspiracy crap. It's dragging everything down.
It's making it take too long, yeah.
And then we have new characters. We should be staying with the professors, but no.
No, that's fine.
We're introduced to Bryan Cranston.
We gotta have some Americans. So Bryan Cranston is a nuclear scientist. He's working at a power plant in Japan. He's married to Juliette Binoche, which is also very classy get. And they have a young son named Ford. They're living in Japan. They're working at this nuclear power plant. They go to work. And Bryan Cranston is concerned because there's a series of earthquakes. And, like, the epicenter is moving? This can't be right. So he's concerned that the power plant might be in some danger and they might need to shut it down. Before he can do that, the earthquakes hit. It's a monster. But the earthquakes hit. And all of a sudden, there's, like, a core breach. And his wife, Juliette Binoche, gets trapped in there. And I will say this. They play this drama like a 1970s disaster movie. Like Bryan Cranston waiting at the door, just hoping his wife gets out in time, but waiting to the last possible second to shut these blast doors. Because if he doesn't shut them before the radiation gets there, like the whole city will die. And he can't have that. And he presses the button just as his wife gets there. And he has to, like, look at her through a window as she's, like, saying goodbye. And then the blast doors shut again. And Bryan Cranston emotes. And you know what? It's ham-fisted, but it works. I feel bad for Bryan Cranston, which is why I'm really annoyed that from here on out, it's not his movie either. Now it's Ford's movie. It's like 20 years later.
Ford, who's his son. We fast forward 15 years.
Yeah.
Ford is now in the military. He's married to Elizabeth Olsen. Ford is played by Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Yeah, like a year later, they would play siblings in Age of Ultron, which is still kind of weird. Like, no one pointed out, you know, this is going to be a little weird.
They're actors.
I know, but it's still weird when, like, you play in a giant blockbuster, you play siblings, and then the next time we see you both, you're acting together again, and now you're making out, or rather vice versa.
Yeah.
It's a little jarring.
They're a married couple. If it were like if they played a married couple in, like, a sex thriller,
yeah,
it'd be like if William Hurt and Kathleen Turner played siblings in a movie immediately after starting Body Heat.
Yeah, okay, that's a more extreme example.
But,
but here they get one makeout scene early on. Ford went into the military. He's now he's Jeremy Renner in The Hurt Locker. He disposes of explosive ordnance. The Hurt Locker was a really big movie.
I love The Hurt Locker.
Not financially. It's actually, I think, the lowest grossing movie. Well, maybe Coda is.
It won Best Picture.
It won Best Picture. It was very, 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 very acclaimed. I think Coda might now be the lowest grossing Best Picture winner.
Okay.
But and maybe Nomadland, but, you know, COVID cutting some slack. So he's Jeremy Renner. And he's come back from the war, and he's excited to finally spend time with his family. His son hasn't seen him in a while. There's a sweet bit where, like, he's playing with his son, and his son said, okay, now it's time to go to bed. Will you be here in the morning, Dad? I promise I'll be here in the morning. and I'll take the phone off the hook just to make sure no plot point prevents that from happening. The phone rings, and it's like the American consulate in Japan, and Bryan Cranston has been arrested for trespassing on the, basically where the nuclear power plant was like destroyed is now quarantined still to this day. And it's considered, you know, off limits. He's become a conspiracy nut. Hmm. Aaron Taylor Johnson goes to Japan, goes into his house and sees what we call the Wall of Crazy. It's not a great name, but it's basically anytime, if you take a handful of news articles and put them on your wall, okay. If you take 50 news articles and put them on your wall, I'm starting to worry. As soon as string gets involved, once you start
attaching two photos with a piece of yarn.
Yeah, yeah. Now I'm concerned about your well-being. That's what's happening here. So Bryan Cranston has gone full conspiracy theorist, and he believes that this nuclear power plant didn't just have a catastrophic flaw. He thinks something bad happened, and he has come to believe that it's something organic in nature because, for reasons, he put like recording devices on flotation buoys around the quarantined island, and he heard monsters talking to each other through echolocation.
Yeah.
So now he is going to investigate, and he convinces Ford to go with him.
This is also boring.
This is taking forever.
This is the first 40 minutes of this movie. All of this description of like the conspiracy sneaking back into the city with Bryan Cranston.
It goes somewhere that I think I see what they were getting at, and we'll get to that in a second. Yeah. But it's a huge waste of time.
Yeah.
They go in there, they have the Amazon women on the moon moment where they realize there's no radiation and they take off their masks. And I'm like, no, what if your device is wrong? What if the machine is wrong? What if you're low on batteries? What are you doing?
I would love to see that played off, because I've seen that in a lot of science fiction movies.
Prometheus,
it's like, take our hoods off. We can breathe in here. I'd love to see, like, wait a minute, our instruments are fine. Take my mask off. And their flesh melts off.
It's not radiation. It turns out there's just, like, flesh-eating spores in the air. Right. Oh, well, we should have thought of that, because we're scientists. They break in, they're immediately arrested, which I appreciate, and they are interrogated, and Bryan Cranston says, no, I know all of these things, Matt. And Ken Watanabe and Sally Hawkins are actually kind of impressed by his insights. We hadn't thought of some of that. That's actually pretty useful. And then this monster is awakened and finally comes out. And I think what they were getting at, and this seems pretty obvious to me, is we assume it's Godzilla.
Yeah.
That's what we've been building to, right? We found, like, an egg inside a Godzilla. It's hatching 15, 19, whatever years later. Okay, now Godzilla's here. And then, surprise, it's another monster. Mm. I think that's fine, but I think they took way too fucking long. It's a good reversal, and then they just took way too goddamn long.
I feel like if this were a Toho film, all of this, like, 40-minute sequence would have taken 3 minutes. Like, there would have been a few scientists, maybe not even with names, who have been, like, searching through a cave. I think Godzilla's in here. And they've got a little Godzilla detector.
Yeah.
A little radiation wand. And they're kind of digging through a tunnel. Wait a minute. I know Godzilla is in here somewhere. There it is. It's Godzilla. And there's a big reveal. Oh, no, it's not Godzilla. And then, the title would have splashed on the screen.
There's two different, like, eras, or I guess, no, that's not, but I guess there's two different approaches I think the Toho films had to Godzilla. The more recent ones, the Millennium and the Heisei era, would have gotten to him right away.
That's true. They started within minutes. Godzilla,
But in the original era, the Showa era, maybe later on they would have gotten to him fast, but earlier on it would be like, and here's a movie about an amusement park for 45 minutes. That's not unusual, really. The difference is that we're clearly building up to it.
Yeah.
And
again, 90-minute movie.
It's also a 90-minute movie. This is a two-hour one. So we're building up to it. The it's a massive, massive unknown terrestrial organism.
Terrestrial organism, Muto, M-U-T-O.
I gotta say, I like the Muto. I think it's a decent monster. It's
like a triangular, flat head and big spindly legs.
It's like a giant tick.
It looks like a bug.
Yeah, like a giant bug, and
but it has like glowing, almost mechanical looking eyes.
Yeah, it's got weird feet that kind of like crawl upwards like a claw.
I don't like the way Gareth Edwards films the monsters because I'm very much on record of how much I like to see a monster in a monster movie.
That's why we're here.
How well photographed they are, how much coverage we get of the monster, how much they're sort of put against a background to give them a good sense of scale. And he likes to film his monsters in shadow or behind clouds. Yeah. So it's difficult for me to see what the Muto looks like beyond like a piece of its head or what its foot looks like.
Especially at first, yeah. We get some wide shots later, but not many, which is annoying. Yeah.
And especially monster design started to change at this point. And you can tell that a lot of mainstream movies were going to the same like design firms to get their monster designs because they all started to look the same from movie to movie.
Mm-hmm.
I had that problem with Pacific Rim. I think the monsters were very creatively designed. They didn't have like a lot of personality.
That's another one we don't get a good look at a lot of them which is a problem. But one thing I've noticed in the last 5-10 years or so is almost every giant monster is a cat. Like quite literally, actually. And like I interviewed the director of the Pete's Dragon remake.
Mm.
And my first question was, So the dragon's your cat, right? And he's like, yeah, it's my cat. And then, How to Train Your Dragon.
That's definitely a cat.
Yeah. The director of Godzilla Minus One said Godzilla's based on his cat. And even in Godzilla X Kong,
Godzilla takes a nap like a kitty.
Yeah, that was, they saw a cat in a box. And it was like, ooh, what if there was like a giant box? What if it was the Colosseum? They're cats. They're all cats. Like, it's time to mix it up a smidge.
Yeah.
I love cats, don't get me wrong. Also, sorry, Dante, but
I know a lot of time and energy goes into creating the creature's roars, and they mix like 30 sounds together, we got a donkey and a jet taking off, and we blended it in this look, and they...
Yeah.
And yet they always kind of sound the same. Well, something that I hate hearing in like monster roar designs is that kind of sound that they give to a lot of monsters.
I think is the first movie monster.
Maybe so, but now every monster does that.
Yeah,
this kind of like guttural sound that is just kind of standard now.
Yeah.
First couple of times scary, but now every monster does it. And these monster movies do it too.
Yep.
So yeah, Muto is free. Yeah.
And it's going to run to the near... And this is in Japan, by the way. It's going to run to the nearest nuclear power source in America.
No, it goes to Japan.
Not right away.
It does. It goes to the one where Aaron Taylor Johnson was... And Bryan Cranston were exploring.
No, it starts there.
Oh, I thought it...
It hatches there and then it leaves.
Oh, and then it goes to Las Vegas.
Yeah, it goes to Nevada, and their argument is that, well, what did America do with all of its nuclear radiation pollution? Well, it just dumped it in Nevada. Mm. So it's gone to Nevada. Fine. Pretty sure there are nuclear power plants in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like...
There's quite a few.
Yeah, you kind of logicked yourself out of logic.
Yeah.
Which is a problem. But also, in the big Muto fight... Bryan Cranston is seriously injured, and there's a bit where the military tells Dr. Sarazawa, what is it in 24? Not anymore, you're not. Now we're in charge. They say, but you're still in an advisory capacity. Is there anyone you need? And he points to Bryan Cranston and says, that guy. And Bryan Cranston is in like a stretcher, and they take him up in a helicopter, and then he dies in the helicopter. Like, why did... He has, like, one last line to Ford, which is just, protect your family. Yeah. I regret not doing the family thing. Whoopsie-daisies. And Aaron Johnson was like, I already knew that. I wasn't, like, Jeremy Renner, like, constantly going off to war and not appreciating my family. I was happy to be with my family.
Yeah,
so that whole beat goes real flat. Yeah. It's totally unnecessary. It's just basically, just he's dead. He killed Bryan Cranston, whatever. Yeah, and then
we're stuck with Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Oh, God.
A cardboard cutout of a character. And no discredit to the actor. I think Aaron Taylor Johnson is fine.
He's fine. I've never really loved him in anything, but he's fine.
I'm looking forward to Kraven the Hunter, where he gets to be like this kind of over-the-top, weird lead character.
From director J.C. Chandor. From the director of Margin Call. Get that paycheck, J.C. Just get it. Get that paycheck.
I'm enjoying this water slide down into the trench of superherodom. It's just getting faster and faster.
I love it. And Sony's responsible for half of it. Well,
fine. Let them snuff it out. I'm fine with that.
But he gives them the information, like, what did your dad tell you? Well, he told me this stuff. And they're like, oh, great. That's useful. Awesome. And then they're like, okay, now go away. And Aaron Taylor Johnson, now he's got to go home. And I'm thinking that what they're kind of getting at, and they never really lean into it, is that Aaron Taylor Johnson from this point on is like Odysseus. He's got to get home, and there's always some fucking monster in the way.
Yeah.
Right? Perfectly fine, actually. An okay pitch for a Godzilla movie. All these monsters are attacking, and we're on the ground floor with one guy who's just trying to get home.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. The Cloverfield did something kind of similar in the found footage drama. I kind of like that movie, actually.
That's all right.
Yeah. A little underappreciated now, I feel. But they just don't do anything interesting with it. The interludes that Aaron Taylor Johnson gets saddled with are really contrived or really dull.
Yeah.
The first one,
more than anything, because he's not interesting. I don't really care about his fate.
He doesn't have a personality. He's just not. If you met him at a bar, you would want to like say, oh, I'm sorry, I have to go over here now, and then turn slightly to the left and hope he gets the hint.
In Godzilla movies, we've said a lot that human characterization is usually like a tertiary concern, even for the audience. It's like you're spending too much time with humans, get to the monsters.
Yeah.
And as a result, a lot of the filmmakers did that. They just sort of skipped over the human stories, or they gave them very cursory explanations.
Yeah. We got to have a human in there somewhere. Mm. Because we can't show the monster constantly.
And I was okay with that. I was okay with that, just using humans as like a structural device rather than, you know, the actual sympathetic figures.
I like it when the humans are fun. Call me crazy.
I like it when the humans are fun, but I'm okay with it if they're not given a huge amount of screen time or their story isn't like the crux of why we're here. So I'm not complaining that he's badly characterized, because we've had plenty of those in Godzilla movies before.
I'll complain about that.
I'll complain that he's badly characterized because they're presenting this as a character piece.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do that, you need to give him more character.
You need to give him something to do. You need to give him problems to solve. You need to give him people to overcome. But he everywhere he goes, things work out pretty much okay for him. Like, he goes, he ends up in Hawaii. That's where they go right after the Japan. And he's like, okay, I'm going to take a flight home. Awesome. Great. And then he ends up like on like a monorail or something, like an elevated train.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's like a little kid who gets separated from his parents. And he being a responsible adult, he says, okay, he waves him. He's like, I'll bring him back to you. Just stay where you are. And then Godzilla and the Mudos attack.
Hmm.
And then the kid ends up back with his parents, all fine. And no one thanks him, by the way, which I feel like he's at least owed a, hey, good job. It's very responsible of you. Well done. Well done.
I think pat on the back, at least. I think I recall when I first saw this, like, they killed off Juliette Binoche right away. It's like, big shocker, big star, they kill her right away. And then Bryan Cranston, they wait 40 more minutes, and then they kill him, too.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're going to kill the star. Wouldn't it have been keen if they also killed Aaron Taylor Johnson? Like, they just killed every protagonist.
They killed him, and then it was up to Elizabeth Olsen.
Yeah, and then they killed her.
God, it'd be great. But no. And so he's trying to get home, and then he ends up, like, hitching a ride. Apparently, all Marines and other soldiers are like, oh, do you say you're a soldier? You have any identification that proves that? We're not going to ask about that. You say you're a soldier, you get a free ride on an airplane. With all of this classified shit going on. Kudos.
I know stolen valor is a crime. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to impersonate a soldier.
No, you shouldn't. At least it's unethical. Yeah.
It's tempting, though, isn't it? If you get on a plane for free, do it once or twice.
I had an awkward moment once.
Just go to an army surplus store, buy a uniform.
I had an awkward moment once where I was driving my brother's car, and he was in the Marines, and he had a bumper sticker, and someone at a gas station like thanked me for my service, and I had to be like, oh, no, this is awkward. No, it's my brother's car. Thank you. I'll tell him. But it was really awkward. And oof. But anyway, the Mudo attacks, we don't really see it. The Mudo goes to Nevada, and that's when Godzilla starts popping up. Godzilla has been activated. Dr. Serizawa is convinced, based on no information whatsoever, that Godzilla is actually, like, the nature's balance. Like, when another monster shows up, Godzilla will show up and destroy it, which has never happened before that Dr. Serizawa knows of. Uh-huh. He has no reason to believe this whatsoever, but he is willing to tell the American military, just don't do anything. Godzilla will handle it. And David Strathairn, great actor.
He's just like a general. He's barely in the movie.
Like, he's bringing gravitas to it. And he's just like, I hear what you're saying. I can't take that risk. And for once, I'm on the military side in one of these movies. I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't take that at face value either. That's a guess at best.
Ken Watanabe is there to give voice to what the audiences want to see. No, Godzilla handle it.
Yeah, well, he has that line, let them fight. Yeah. Which is a great line. It reads great in a trailer, right?
In a trailer, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything's been so contrived.
They're trying so hard to make it seem serious. You're hiding the fact that this is really contrived.
It's really contrived. Work. It's a, kind of a simple story that you're stretching out.
So much.
It's a 90-minute movie.
It wants to be a 90-minute movie so bad. You can tell.
You trim out so much of this movie.
Yeah.
The dour tone and it.
Yeah.
It feels so useless.
Yeah.
Like, we're here for all of these, like, exciting monster things, and they keep alluding to it, and they're trying to interest me with interesting, like, plot twists.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay being twisted. I don't mind... I'm not outraged that they killed off Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
For instance.
No, that's fine. I can work with that. Horror movies have trained me on that for forever. Janet Leigh, Drew Barrymore, whatever. Yeah, fine.
Kill off the protagonist. That's fine. That's not what I'm complaining about. That you think I'm here to see that.
Yeah.
Rather than Godzilla in a movie called Godzilla.
Yeah, give us the Godzilla stuff. We do want it eventually. I don't need it all up front.
I can be patient. I can wait half a movie.
I can be patient, but you'd better fucking give us the Godzilla stuff we paid for. I understand that some people get annoyed by movies that subvert expectations. And some movies subvert expectations to great effect.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were annoyed by The Last Jedi. We're not going to get into this whole spiel, but say what you will.
I like what they did in that movie.
Ryan Johnson subverted our expectations. Luke threw away the lightsaber. Ray's parents were nobody. But these decisions, though they were not what the fans expected, were there for a reason. They served a thematic point, and they pushed the plot into new and different directions. These are exciting changes. They might not be what you wanted to see. I'm sorry, but they're not arbitrary. They're not there just to subvert your expectations. Godzilla, this movie is just doing it to subvert your expectations. There's no meaningful purpose that I can tell behind having Godzilla walk up to Amuro. We're finally going to see him fight, and then cutting to a kid napping, and then we see a couple of seconds of the fight on a TV, and then mom turns it off.
Yeah.
That's just you fucking with us.
Yeah.
And when you could do it once, and it's a funny joke.
Uh-huh.
You do it throughout the movie. It's an understandable emotion to be annoyed. Because you're trying to annoy us.
I'm almost...
And you never pay it off. You never just give us...
you're describing it now, and I'm thinking, there should have been an epilogue. There was no monster. like a monster, a go-go.
Well, what was the... Who did Deep Thoughts? Remember Deep Thoughts?
By Jack Handy.
Jack Handy. Deep Thoughts. It was a
Saturday Night Live.
It was a Saturday Night Live bit. Yeah, it was basically this very mellow voice, and he would say something that would sound very profound, but it was ultimately very silly.
And it was just text that was superimposed over, like, the ocean waves.
Yeah.
You know, like, birds flying.
Yeah.
Very peaceful things. Yeah. Deep Thoughts with Jack Handy.
I bet the funny thing about driving a car off a cliff is you still hit those brakes. Hey, try the emergency brake. It's funny.
One of my favorites was, it's astonishing to think that a family can be ripped apart by something as simple as wild dogs.
But I think this was a Jack Handy one, but it was one time I took my kids to Disneyland, but instead of taking them to Disneyland, I took them to a burned out factory and told them, oh no, Disneyland burned down. I was going to take them to Disneyland again afterwards to make it up to them. But it was getting pretty late. It's like, you got to take them to Disneyland afterwards. Otherwise, they're allowed to be mad at you.
So I see your point. I'm allowed to be mad at Gareth Edwards for making the movie the way he made it.
It's an annoyingly constructed movie. It's not without quality bits. Like, there are moments I really like
it. Technically, it's great.
Yeah, yeah. There's some really cool shit going on here. Oh, by the way, it turns out there was another Muto. And this one's now giant, and the Mutos are trying to find each other in order to mate and make more Mutos. And Godzilla's like, well, I don't want more Mutos. And Godzilla starts trying to fight him.
You're birthed of the same parent, your brother, sister. Little incest Mutos there. Yeah. They're giant bugs.
They're giant bugs. Their genetics
are different.
Yeah, they have whole things. So that's what's going on here. And Aaron Taylor Johnson ends up, first off, when he finds out the monsters are headed to San Francisco, which they are. And his wife lives in San Francisco. He calls his wife. Finally, he's able to get a phone call. And it's an emergency. You can't always do it. Fine. She works at a hospital because it doesn't pay off. It just gives her something to do. And he calls her and says, hey, I'm coming to get you. Stay where you are. Instead of saying, hey, evacuate the city immediately. Take our son and go. What in the shit? Bryan Cranston told you to protect your family. It was his dying word. And you told them to wait for you at ground zero of Monster Attack Central. What are you doing?
I hate the lack of basic communication in a lot of movies where people just... Scenes where people explain things to each other. I like scenes like that just because I like clarity.
Yeah.
There's
I don't mind clarity at all.
I remember there's somebody pointed out that in the movie Aliens, the James Cameron movie, Sigourney Weaver is looking after a young girl that she's rescued. Somebody who like saw aliens tear her parents apart. Yeah. She's really traumatized. Newt. And she's always like holding Newt close and saying things like, Newt, come this way. Newt, be quiet. Newt, close your eyes. But then at the end of the movie where there's like a gigantic monster fight.
Yeah.
And she like opens an airlock into open space. Doesn't think to yell, Newt, hang on to something. And I just think how cool it would have been, like the alien queen like tumbles out into space
and then
Newt zips past. Oh shit.
Well, considering how Alien 3 turned out, you might as well.
Yeah, right. That would have been great. I love Alien 3 because it's so miserable.
I know, it's great. The plan... we didn't mention this. One of the Mutos have a special attack, and for whatever reason, it's an electromagnetic pulse. And if you're unfamiliar with an electromagnetic pulse will knock out any electrical system
around. Interferes with electrical systems, no matter what it is.
It's a side effect of nuclear bombs, often is the case. But it can also... Movies often like to throw them in there whenever it's convenient to turn all the power off.
We need to shut off a city. They use it in like Ocean's 11.
The Matrix said this. The EMP is the only device we have that works against these sentinel monsters because they're so well constructed. But we can shut them off electrically. The Mutos have that. And there's some cool bits, actually, where they release their EMP, and then all of a sudden, jets start falling out of the sky, and it's kind of impressive, and all that stuff is cool. But the military's plan to destroy these monsters that feed off radiation is to nuke them.
Yeah, the thing they tried, 50 years ago and 60 years ago, and it didn't work.
And it didn't work, but this time we have bigger nuclear weapons, so we're pretty sure, even though they literally eat nuclear radiation to survive, we're pretty sure the impact will be enough. And
remember when they shot a nuclear missile at the Martians and Mars Attacks?
Yeah.
That, like, that little kazoo-looking thing that sucked up the nuclear explosion.
And then they inhaled it, like helium.
And just because it made their voices go funny.
Yeah.
I also love Mars Attacks.
Nuclear bombs are like every Hollywood military solution to everything. Is New York being attacked by the Chitauri? Shoot a nuclear missile at it. The Avengers were doing fine.
Well, in fact, the Avengers, here's an issue I have with the Avengers. They don't do anything that like a dozen Harrier jets couldn't have done.
You're not, at least at the end anyway. But
yeah, like in that big final attack.
Yeah, whatever. But in any case... So they can't fly a jet into the monsters and shoot a nuclear weapon at it. So their plan is to take a old school mechanical nuclear bomb via train and just sort of slowly work it up to San Francisco and hope the Mudos don't attack it. They do.
They have to walk the bomb.
They do. And here's the thing. That is not the only way to deliver that nuclear bomb.
No.
First off, you could shoot a nuclear bomb from a nuclear submarine off the coast. Mm. Oh no, what if the nuclear bomb falls on the Mudo?
That's the point.
That's the point. We're fine. If you could also, and then when the decision, when the train thing goes terribly awry, and everyone dies except for Ford, like literally everyone except for Ford dies. What a charmed life. The plan now is... the Mudo, by the way, picks up the nuclear bomb and takes it with it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
so that like its babies can feed off the off the radiation from it.
By the way, of course they're having babies.
Yeah. So now it's like, okay, well, we need to get in there and activate the bomb so that it will destroy these monsters, we hope. But we can't fly you in there because the Mudos might turn up. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a halo jump, which is basically what like Tom Cruise did in Fallout. We're going to like drop from like as far up as a plane could possibly fucking go. Mm. And then just...
skydive. Yeah.
And I had a moment. You know, you misremembered that ending of Dracula?
Yeah.
I could have sworn someone fell from the sky and into Godzilla's mouth, or the Mudo's mouth. And I think that kind of happened in King of the Monsters with Rodan. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But I was like, I was waiting for it, because it was like, ooh, this is going to be good. No, I just sort of, down. But they're going to drop down, and I'm thinking, like, you could have dropped a nuke from that high.
Just dropped it.
Dropping it. There's a bit.
Gravity, you know?
They talk about how, like, oh no, our EMP is out. We can't track these Mudos in the ocean. Don't you have satellites?
Don't you have fucking windows? They're huge. Just
what are you doing here? My God. You want to have... Michael Bay is the king of this, but he's not the only one who does it. This is military porn.
Yeah.
This is a lot of like cool... Oh, the military is treated as completely heroic, good guys...
weirdly, the military didn't participate in this one.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't.
Now...
That's weird, actually. I would have assumed.
And I think a lot of American films now just do this because that's the way it works. But it's pretty well known that if you want to depict the military in your movie and have access to their vehicles and their uniforms and all of the accoutrements you would need to depict the military, the military has to lend it to you. And they're only going to do that if you depict the military in a positive light.
Generally speaking,
Evidently, all the way back, the U.S. Navy was still holding a grudge from 1998 when the military weren't depicted as being heroic enough.
In Godzilla?
In Roland Emmerich's Godzilla. So they said, no, we're not going to do it. So if the weapons look a little weird or the uniforms don't look like official, that would be why.
I didn't know that. That one's weird. So Ford has the halo jump in there, and he's like the only one who knows how bombs work in the military. And so they're going to drop...
He's the protagonist, it's fine.
So Godzilla is fighting these Mudos, and we're finally getting some decent fight moments.
Ish, brief, but they're there.
They halo jump in, and then they find the bomb, and it turns out the bomb has, like, 27 minutes left on it. And then the whole thing is, Ford can defuse it in 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Great. But the latch on like the to open it up is stuck. So rather than take 30 seconds to try to get a crowbar and pry that sucker open, they go to plan B. Plan B is drag the nuclear bomb to hopefully a civilian boat has survived and then drive it as far away from the city as possible. This is a megaton nuclear blast.
You have to get like... A little boat is not going to take it far enough away.
Not in 27 minutes.
No.
No, you need to be going at like 200 miles an hour to get anywhere even remotely a safe distance. But that's what they lean to rather than let's try to open this fucker up because Ford can defuse it really fast.
See, if they had decided to go like... And here's my big frustration. If they decided to make it schlocky, the way it wants to be, the way it was written, the way these plot points are supposed to play out,
yeah,
he would have found a speedboat.
Sure, why not?
They found a speedboat and and there's like
and some... there would have been like some rich asshole that set up earlier in the movie, and he's like when the Godzilla attacks, he's like, oh, but I have to save my diamonds, my conflict diamonds that I have
on my speedboat.
That's why he's like waiting behind. He was trying to like get out with his diamonds, and he's like dodging all the stuff, and then it pays off right there.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, fine, I'll use my boat and I'll do something noble and I'll drive this bomb out.
Sure.
And
or Ford has to punch him. I don't know, something. It would be fine, you know? But it establishes why there's the world's fastest commercially available boat just happens to be there.
That's really corny, but that would have worked in a scene like this.
It would have worked fine. It would have been corny, but it's not like this movie is... It's not corny, but it is hackneyed.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a lateral move from corny.
If you're going to be hackneyed, also be corny.
Might as well.
Do something kind of cheesy with it. I'm okay with it.
Because all of these emotional beats aren't really hitting.
None of the emotional beats are hitting because I don't care about any of the characters.
No, they're really perfunctory.
Building up all of these characters.
And they're making terrible decisions. Earlier in the film.
Just because they're filmed with portent and they're directed to give their really downbeat emotional line readings doesn't mean it's an emotional film.
No. I mean, can be, but no, in this case, it's not. There's a scene where Elizabeth Olsen is, they're evacuating the hospital. Like, all the particularly wounded and the kids are being evacuated first. And another nurse tells Elizabeth Olsen, I don't know if she's a nurse or a doctor or whatever, but she works at the hospital. Another person who works at the hospital says, you should get out of here. There's fucking giant monsters attacking. And Elizabeth Olsen is like, no. Ford said he'd be here.
There's a monster attacking.
There's a monster attacking,
okay,
for God's sake.
Okay, what? And then you can get stomped on together? Get
right? And then eventually she realizes, okay, no, that's nonsense. So she grabs her son and she hands her son to that other lady on it so that he'll be with her and not his mother. Hmm. Which, I guess, but they're evacuating the hospital. So just go. What are we doing here? but the kids end up in a bus on the Golden Gate Bridge. And you know you're in trouble when a movie cost over $100 million and there's a scene on the Golden Gate Bridge. This is not going to go well. I seriously think that... I was asking around online about this. Like, what is the landmark that has been destroyed the most times in movies? And apparently, I'm not 100%...
My guess would be the Statue of Liberty, but...
Statue of Liberty is up there, I'm sure. Empire State Building is up there, I'm sure. But if I were to guess, and I would have thought the Golden Gate Bridge would be number one.
Okay.
Because it's constantly destroyed. But apparently there's a really good chance it's actually Tokyo Tower.
Okay.
Because it's destroyed in almost every kaiju movie.
I guess so.
So, fair enough, I suppose. But the Golden Gate Bridge is destroyed in every movie where the Golden Gate Bridge appears. It's just absolutely cursed. But Godzilla is showing up to try to kill all these Mudos, and the military is, like, ready for him at the Golden Gate Bridge. And Godzilla, to Godzilla's credit, tries to swim under them.
Uh-huh.
He's like, you know what? I'm going to let you have a pass. I'm feeling magnanimous today. I'm just going to... And then they shoot Godzilla, and Godzilla's like, okay, well, now I got to get pissed off and do a whole thing. So Godzilla starts... And then the bridge explodes. The bridge explodes partially because they shoot missiles at it. It's really not Godzilla's fault. They're going out of their way because at the end of the movie, they're going to be a big news chyron saying, is Godzilla mankind's savior? And that's a stretch, but they're doing the thing that they used to do in The Incredible Hulk. If you recall, in The Incredible Hulk, Bruce Banner would turn into The Incredible Hulk. This is before he could, like, control it or anything. No. And the Hulk was a rampaging monster, and he would break everything in sight. In the comics, and yes, it's incredibly contrived, but it allowed the character to not hate themselves. The Hulk was never responsible for anyone's death.
Okay.
No matter, a lot of destruction. Mm. No one ever actually died because the Incredible Hulk went on a rampage, unless that was like a monster that was going to kill everybody. The second someone dies, Bruce Banner wouldn't be able to live with himself.
Okay.
So you need to have that thing. So what they're doing with Godzilla here, where We're not going to go so far as to say that Godzilla is actually a hero and is going to, like, salute the American military at the end as he walks off. But we are going to go out of our way to show that Godzilla isn't directly responsible for any of this devastation. It's all the Mudos.
Yeah.
Godzilla shows up to stop the Mudos, and yeah, Godzilla gets knocked into a building, but he doesn't knock it down for fun.
Yeah.
He's in the middle of a fight. It's collateral damage. So they're trying to get Godzilla off the hook.
Of course, if that's the case, if we're supposed to be take Godzilla as this force of nature, as Yoshimitsu Banno probably was the one who wanted that. Mm. What are we taking from this movie?
What's the point?
What's the point of this? Like, what is this movie trying to tell us about Godzilla? About destruction? About nature?
Yeah,
about forces of family, good versus evil. There's nothing going on in this film.
Family is good, I guess, but I don't need a Godzilla movie to tell me that.
But they make bad decisions to reunite. This is not about, like, I'm in a safe place, come get me, and I have to stay in danger or something like that.
I'm just gonna burn through the movie so we can talk about the themes real fast. The Godzilla and the Mudos fight. There's actually a cute moment where Godzilla has been knocked down by the Mudos, and it sees Ford, and they just have a... Mondays, am I right? Like, they just have a moment, and I actually kind of like that. I thought that was a good beat. Ford tries to escape with the nuclear bomb. Somehow he gets far enough away and is rescued by a helicopter. No. I don't buy that for one. I buy Godzilla more than I buy that. And Godzilla's final killing move on the second Mudo is pretty boss, I'm not going to lie.
He pukes
radioactive fire down its throat.
Right into its mouth.
I haven't seen that move before.
It's pretty cool.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I'm not going to take that away from them. They have a good finishing move.
It doesn't
rescue the movie, but I'm going to give credit where credit is due.
It's one cool moment.
Whoever came up with that bit, we've done over dozens of Godzilla and giant monster movies that we reviewed on this show that are part of the Godzilla mythos. Coming up with a new move is difficult.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you a little credit for
especially after those awesome fights from Godzilla Godzilla against Mechagodzilla.
Yeah. Great fucking moves in that one.
Or Godzilla versus Megaguirus. Like,
they were holding nothing back.
Broad and clear and go on for a while.
No. Like, seriously, I'm giving this movie kudos. He has a good finishing move. Godzilla wanders off, and everyone's like, oh, thanks, Godzilla, I guess. And then Ford's like with his family and stuff, and then we're done. That's it. That's the movie.
We're using modern special effects to realize Godzilla. They're trying to make Godzilla look bigger than ever, which means they're trying to give Godzilla real weight, real gravity.
Yeah.
I always would be curious to know what would happen if something that weighs as much as Godzilla would try to walk through an actual city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it would collapse into whatever's underneath the city.
Yeah, the subway is just gone. Like, it wouldn't hold him for 1 second.
Yeah.
You know, like, if he's, like, maybe... I know there's, like, an upper limit on that, because obviously... Mm-hmm. Buildings aren't falling through the ground. Right. So, like, but their mass is distributed differently. There's stuff like that. But, like, I imagine some of the smaller monsters, you know, they might crunch the concrete, but they're not necessarily going to fall through. So, like, the Zilla version of Godzilla might be just small enough or big enough to not do that. This is a giant fucking beast. This is like
the size of a building.
Yeah.
It's shifting its weight around on like the actual streets. It's falling down.
Like, even in Tokyo SOS, Godzilla like crunched, like fell down and crunched through the subway. Yeah. You know?
So it's falling down and they're realizing these monsters, trying to make it, you know, give it actual weight and gravity, trying to make it look as real as possible.
Right.
Which is fine.
Yeah, it's a take.
Realism.
Yeah.
It is, however, a fantasy picture about a giant animal with a 60-year tradition of absurdity.
True. And the occasional one that takes it seriously.
Occasionally, there's a few that take, you know, the story very dramatically.
Yeah.
I feel like there's this weird preoccupation with a certain kind of visual reality in special effects based blockbusters. We're going to try to make this look as real as possible, which is not the function of special effects necessarily. It's to create an interesting visual.
Yeah.
It's to create something that will dazzle the audience with its unreality.
You've created an effect, but is it really special?
It's not, well, like,
that's the thing.
And they worked really, really hard to make that thing look as real as possible when we're dealing with a fantasy film that should be kind of strange and unusual and kind of dazzling in a way, something that will really really make our eyes sparkle when we see it. Like, either we don't know how they did it, or we do, and we're impressed with the way it was drawn and presented. Yeah,
stylized, designed, and I'm going to give an example right here. Yeah. Godzilla X Kong is a fun looking movie.
Yeah,
like, it's got a bunch of weird shit in that movie. I love how things look in that movie.
Yeah, there's a scene where gravity turns off briefly and monsters are fighting.
Yeah,
and there's no up or down or anything. It's like, what the fuck is happening?
Science has been thrown out. Every physics professor just like just quit their jobs. Yeah. And yet. I don't care.
I'm gonna have a better time watching that movie.
Because there's nothing in it for us if it's real. Yeah, like, to establish the reality of it would take away from that, not add to it.
And in fact, in so doing, Gareth Edwards, a director I've come to hate, by the way.
Oh, really?
Has created a really bland movie.
Yeah.
It's not interesting to look at. It's really drab. He's not staging things interestingly.
There are moments. I really like the moment when they're on... like the train bridge and the Mudos, like giant Mudos crawling beneath them, and you can see them, like, just kind of like, just don't move. Mm. That was good. That was kind of intense. I love giant monster movies when there's a really good sense of how tiny human beings are in comparison to them. And I think there are moments in this movie that do that as well or better than most Godzilla movies.
All right.
And in those brief moments, which are scattered throughout the movie, I see what they're going for.
Yeah,
and I wish they'd been able to sustain that.
No, to Gareth Edwards' credit, I didn't see his debut feature. It was called Monsters.
I still haven't seen Monsters
either, and I heard that one was quite good. And this was another case of a director making an acclaimed indie picture being scooped up by the studio machine.
Yeah, right away.
Because he did Godzilla, and immediately after this, he did Rogue One, a movie I loathe.
Funnily enough, much like the director of Godzilla Minus One, he also worked on the visual effects on Monsters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so got a little something there. But yeah, he did Rogue One, which, I know a lot of people love that movie. I don't love that movie. I don't think it works. B, a lot of that movie was reshot by Tony Gilroy.
Was it really?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's like well established. Tony Gilroy's talked about that. Gareth Edwards did a cut. For all I know, it was brilliant. I know there was a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor that ended up not in the movie. And Tony Gilroy was brought in to shoot new scenes and reshape it.
Okay.
And sure enough, when they did the spin-off TV series Ander, Tony Gilroy was the one who did it, not Gareth Edwards.
Oh, interesting.
So, and that movie, and that show is fucking awesome,
and
by
then
the way.
Most recently he did that film, The Creator.
Which I still haven't seen.
Which, I like the visuals in that one. I feel like he put a lot of interesting, very anime-inspired city designs that I thought were really cool looking. But it's another dour picture with not a very interesting message and dull characters. I just don't think he knows how to handle these kinds of movies, and they keep handing him the biggest... They gave him two of like the biggest sci-fi franchises
in the
world.
He's got a really dramatic, and I say that in a very neutral way, just a very dramatic aesthetic. He makes things look like, oh, shit's about to go down. And that's a good starting point for a filmmaker, but then you also have to be able to bring something out of the material.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about this, and I wanted to get back to it. What is Godzilla 2014 about? It doesn't have to be about anything profound. But it's if you're going to be portentous, you'd better have something akin to a point.
Yeah.
And you've removed the nuclear analogy from Godzilla, so that's gone. You don't have anything going on with your characters that amounts to more than family good.
Uh-huh.
You don't have anything critical to say about social systems or government or anything political along those lines. All this movie has, all it is doing... is trying to evoke our collective and then even more recent memory of particularly huge tragedies, particularly 9/11.
Yeah.
And you notice this a lot when, like, the monsters are fighting. We don't get to see that personal up-close look. We see it on TV. Mm-hmm. How did most people see 9/11?
Yeah.
On TV.
This
incredibly gigantic... people said it looked like a movie.
Mm.
Like, that kind of thing is the kind of thing that only happens in a movie. But we saw it on a screen. Or when we are in the city and all the attacks are happening, it's kicking up so much dust that we can't see them. That's another image that we got from the tragedy of 9/11. So all it is what if Godzilla was filmed kind of like the way we saw 9/11?
And but I'm that's like, an aesthetic exercise.
That's an aesthetic exercise. Because there's Gareth nothing to that.
Gareth Edwards is not commenting on any of that. You could say there's a lot of images of destruction of nuclear facilities. The Fukushima disaster was just a few years before that.
Yes, you're just evoking it and not doing anything with it.
They're not running any kind of commentary. They're not saying anything that Godzilla represents X, Y, or Z. It's just... And you don't have to do that, but
you brought it up.
So it starts to feel really, really mercenary. And given the way a lot of people were talking about these blockbusters in the tens, it was all about marketing speculation.
Yeah.
It was all about what could fill up a podcast. How many article headlines can you get out of it?
Yeah.
It fed into this really cynical ecosystem that we were living through that decade.
Yeah.
And I'm rewatching it. I dislike it more now than when I saw it initially because I have a little bit of perspective on how little it was doing in terms of like artistry and messaging.
Yeah.
And how much it was doing in terms of marketing and setting up a universe.
Yeah. I will give this movie a little credit.
Mm.
I've already done it before. I think, the final move is cool. That's not enough to save the movie, but it is cool. I think that there are definitely moments that it is suitably epic. And I think I saw this movie the first time in theaters. I haven't seen it since until I rewatched it for this podcast. My opinion remains largely the same, but outside of a theater, those moments are not as strong.
Yeah.
This is definitely a movie that benefits from the theatrical experience, but even then it's still annoying. Where was I going with this? Oh, the other thing I'll give it credit for. I will give this movie credit for setting up elements that would be important later in the legendary Monsterverse without being incredibly obvious about it.
Yeah.
They mention a few lines of dialogue that are important later about, they went underground, they feed up radiation, they introduce that the Sarazawa works for an organization called Monarch. This will be more important in Kong Skull Island and then throughout. You've got it all there, and you're not unlike The Mummy, where it was like, here's a tour of our big facility where we catch monsters. And hey, look, Dr. Jekyll is here, and he'll have a whole scene where he forgets to take his medication. How he does that, I have no idea. You'd think that would be rather important to him. But anyway, so it's just shovel fed to the audience. There will be more. There's more coming, we promise you. And here, a few lines of dialogue, couple plot points, not super heavy-handed, and they will be important later. Kudos, you actually set it up nice.
There's a cute scene early in the movie where it takes place in a classroom, and
they
just happen to be studying butterflies, and there's a picture of a moth that looks a little bit like Mothra.
Right? That's cute.
That's all you need. That's a cute little wink.
Thank you.
If you don't notice that, it doesn't hurt the movie.
Yeah,
you do, you're like, oh, that's cute.
There was a moment that was kind of weird where the opening, not the opening scene, but the next opening scene where we meet Bryan Cranston's family and young Ford is like building his dad like a birthday banner. Ford's bedroom has, and I couldn't make it out, I don't know if it's like real or if it was like a fake one, but he has like a kaiju monster movie poster.
Huh.
And I was like, okay, so is this...
So kaiju movies exist in this universe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they would. Giant monsters are cinematic. They probably would be, but it wouldn't be King Kong.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be Godzilla. I guess Beast from 20,000 Fathoms was very popular at the time. Like,
Dagra.
There you go, Dagra. Dagra became a huge...
Yeah, yeah.
I love it when people do think that stuff out. Like Alan Moore, when he did The Watchmen. It's a universe in which people who were costume superheroes did exist.
Yeah.
So Alan Moore theorized, well, they probably wouldn't be that popular in comics then because it would be like documentaries. People wanted escapism. So in Alan Moore's head, the comics that were super popular in the Watchmen universe were pirate comics.
Right.
Pirate comics reigned supreme. So like you thought it out. Good for you. This one kind of just raised a question. But anyway, Godzilla 2014. Far from the worst Godzilla movie, but not by a... it's far from the worst Godzilla movie, but it's also way down there.
It's in the bottom 10, I'll say that.
Oh, easily,
because of how empty it is. The effects are impressive, but that's all you got.
Yeah, but to what end?
And we're going to continue with this Monsterverse, and I feel like they're going to get a toehold. Frankly, when Adam Wingard, a filmmaker who has a little bit of a sense of humor, will finally take over.
I think it builds... Each successive movie builds up to when Godzilla vs. Kong and Godzilla X Kong kind of find the right balance. I think Kong Skull Island makes a similar mistake in trying to make it like It's not as dour, but, like, when you're trying to evoke Apocalypse Now for your entire movie, it's like, that's an aesthetic choice and maybe not why we're here. And then Godzilla King of the Monsters, getting in the right direction, a little...
Better ideas, but you're still not making it very
unnecessarily well. Complicated plotting, you're doing all this kind of stuff, but eventually they find it. And I appreciate a franchise, a series... that actually is able to improve itself over time. A lot of the best series, movies or TV or otherwise, that we take for granted now, they didn't crack the formula right away.
Yeah.
Even Godzilla. The original Godzilla is a classic, but it took them a couple of films to figure out the giant monster fight formula.
Yeah.
You know? That's why we're here. So, they're gonna crack it, but this first one is... still not great. Is it better? Would you rather watch this movie or the Roland Emmerich Godzilla?
Ooh, that's tough. You know what? I think I'd rather watch the Roland Emmerich film. Mm-hmm. It's annoying. It's way too long. It's a bit of a chore to get through. It's longer than this one.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more energy and color and things happening in that movie.
It's trying to get your attention.
It's contrived and junky and stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's at least a little bit more energetic. This one is just depressive. I'm not going to get anything out of this one through another watch.
If you presented me, like, we're going to watch one of these tonight. I have a DVD of Godzilla 2014 and Roland Emmerich's Godzilla. I would say, why do you own both of those? why are those the only options we have for Godzilla movies tonight? Why?
Do you have Shin Godzilla, perhaps?
No, I'll rather watch All Monsters Attack. Just something. Like, it's... So, they both frustrate me. But I would argue that the Roland Emmerich movie is a bit more... If you're gonna be shameless, if you're gonna be clunky, if you're gonna be ham-fisted, at least be in good spirits.
Yeah.
And the Roland Emmerich movie, as not good as it is,
it's quite bad. Yeah.
It's more watchable than I think we often give it credit for.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, I would argue it's, of the two American Just Godzilla movies, I would hesitate to call Roland Emmerich's film the good one, but it is the more entertaining one.
It is the more entertaining
one. Yeah. So that is it for Godzilla 2014. We will be back next time with Shin Godzilla, right?
No. Godzilla, you're right. Shin Godzilla came out 2016.
Yeah.
So yeah, the joke I keep telling is that, Toho would hand Godzilla off to America.
Yeah.
America would make a Godzilla movie and Toho would say, okay, no. you did it wrong. You don't get to do that and come back with their own, which is what happened with Godzilla 2000.
Yeah.
And I feel like America said, okay, we made this one, and they said, no.
Yeah.
We're going to come back, and we're going to make Shin Godzilla. And Shin Godzilla's...
It's one of the best Godzilla movies.
Been very transparent. It's one of my favorites. I think it's one of the best.
Yeah, it's another one that takes it seriously. But this one actually does have a point, and it's an updated point for a modern era. And I haven't watched it since it came out.
It's the first time Godzilla's been scary. Godzilla's really
weird. The original is kind of scary.
The original is kind of scary.
Yeah. But like they try to make him scary in a modern context and succeed.
And the monster's like a lot like weirder.
Yeah.
Like Godzilla's actually kind of, you get a sense that a gigantic animal like that would blow your fucking mind.
Yeah.
Like it's not just an animal you'd watch on TV.
Yeah. No,
like,
I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun to revisit. So we're going to do Shin Godzilla next on Thank Godzilla. It's Friday. We've only got, we've got less than 10 movies left. No, wait, we have exactly 10 movies left.
All right.
As of now. So we're in the end game, people. but it's very exciting. I'm looking forward to it. And thank you very much for listening. Thank you for joining us. If you want to listen to our episode about Shin Godzilla right now, well, if you're listening to the main feed, our patrons get episodes 1 week early. So head on over to our Patreon, sign up at any tier, and you're going to get Thank Godzilla It's Friday 1 week early. You get all of our new podcasts ad-free, and you also get a ton of exclusive shows at every single tier. So check out our collections section. Enjoy. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there to appreciate. Star Trek... the Oscars, we did Disney movies that aren't on Disney Plus that Disney would rather have us forget about. We did a podcast with every episode of the Adam West Batman. We have a ton of this deep dive stuff, and a lot of it's over at our Patreon. So thank you to all of our patrons. We can't do this without you. We're very grateful to you. If you want to talk about anything we discussed in this episode, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net.
That's right.
Whitney, what is our P.O. Box?
Yeah, send us a physical letter to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
We are on social media, at Critic Acclaim. I personally am at William Bibbiani.
I personally am at Whitney Seibold.
And until next time, roar!